You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
And happy Tuesday to you. Welcome into our Fayetteville studio with Christina Long, the managing editor of Hogs Illustrated. We're going to do something today. We're going to kind of compare the rosters for Arkansas football from last season to this year. You know, there's a lot of talk right now about, is Arkansas better than last year? My personal opinion is I think it's a better team than it was a year ago. But, you know, again, you never know what that's going to mean in terms of wins and losses. They play a lot of teams that think they have better rosters than they did a year ago, or at least you think they have really strong competition. Arkansas's got a tough schedule. Everybody knows that. They play 7 ranked teams in the preseason. But just looking at Arkansas specifically today, do they have a better roster than they did last year? Sam Pittman spoke at the Little Rock Touchdown Club on Monday, and he was very adamant, Christina, in that, and I know you heard it too, he said, we've got a good team.
Yeah, I mean, he feels really confident in this group, which, I mean, says a lot, about, especially about the transfer pieces that they've added. They added a lot in the spring. I think they added 10. And I think when you are adding guys in the spring who you need to be contributors and you actually feel good about them after only having them for, you know, a few months, I think that says a lot. And, you know, it's another one of those, like, we won't really know till we know. But, right. I mean, they feel good about them right now. And I do think that says a lot. These are guys that they expect to contribute.
I always feel like it's kind of a red flag when you have to add a lot of transfers. But I don't know how much of a red flag it is anymore because it's happening everywhere. You know, I mean, like, even Ohio State, and the quality of the transfer that Ohio State's bringing in is a lot higher. I understand that. But, you know, they go out and they get Caleb Downs this offseason. They got Quinshon Judkins from Ole Miss. Everybody is fortifying their roster with transfers. So, on one hand, I think it's a red flag when you have a lot of transfers. On the other hand, I don't know that I think it's quite as alarming as maybe I used to.
Right. To me, it's less about transfers in general and more about post-spring game transfers. Because these are guys that spent a whole spring with a different team, and you know, then they had to leave. And then there can be questions about, okay, why did they leave after spring? And then there's questions of how quickly can they get caught up? It depends on the guy, and it depends on how you go about catching them up and bringing them in. And, you know, if you do it well, great. But I'm always a little bit more hesitant with spring transfers just to put a lot of expectations on them. But Arkansas has kind of – they've put a lot of expectations on them. And, you know, I think they feel confident in a lot of these guys, especially on the defense.
I want to tell you, you can get the latest breaking news on all your Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Analysis, latest in recruiting from Richard Davenport, unique stories on all the teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Let's jump into this. Begin where I think all the discussion always begins, is at quarterback. They go from KJ Jefferson a year ago to Talen Green this year. I think my opinion on this is that if you were comparing Talen Green to the 2022 version of KJ Jefferson, I think there would be an argument to be made about who was better. Last year's version of KJ was not very good, and I think a lot of that begins with the fact that, and we heard David Basil say this on the show last week, that the pairing of KJ with Dan Enos just did not work like the pairing of KJ with Kendall Briles. And then you kind of juxtapose that against, they go and they get Talen Green, who they think fits Bobby Petrino's system very well. Petrino thinks he fits that system very well. My opinion is at quarterback, based on the 23 version of KJ Jefferson, they've upgraded.
Yeah, I would agree with that, especially that was a point I was going to make too, is the KJ of last season was not the same KJ as the seasons before. And that was, you know, that was unfortunate. But I also think a lot of it will depend on offensive line. That was another big reason for the struggles last year. And, you know, it's hard to be good when you don't have any protection. And so,
or you don't have a run game.
Right. Yes, exactly. And so I think it'll depend a lot on that for Talen Green. I still have some questions about Talen Green, but I think, you know, Bobby Petrino handpicked him, supposedly. Like, this was the guy that he wanted when Pittman turned it over to him and said, go get who you want. He wanted Talen Green. And so this is somebody that he thinks will work for him. And so I think there's a lot to be said for a quarterback that comes in with an offensive coordinator who, you know, really has chosen them to fit their style and their system. So, I mean, it'll depend on a lot of things. You can't put it all on one guy, but as far as just a one-to-one between last season and this season, I do expect it to be better at quarterback.
The problem, or I guess maybe the concern with Green, might be two or threefold. Number one, he hasn't played SEC competition. Right. It's a big jump from going playing Colorado State and San Jose State to playing Alabama, and I know they won't play Alabama, but Texas and LSU. big difference. The completion percentage and the interceptions were an issue with him last year. It's why he lost out on his starting job for a time, or at least lost out on being their primary quarterback for a time. Got it back at the end of the season when Maddox Madsen, who he split time with, got injured. I just kind of go back to, and this is what I think a lot of Arkansas's hopes are going to hinge on this year. Players go to new situations, whether it be something personal, whether it be a new way of coaching, whether it be a new system, they can get better. They can get worse too, but they can get better, and they can look a whole lot different. So on one hand, I think you have to consider what he did at Boise State, but on the other hand, you have to take into consideration that that's not what he's going to be asked to do this year. I think about like a Mason Jones in Razorback basketball. I mean, think about what he was before he came and he got into Eric Musselman's system, became a totally different player. And so I wonder if maybe you might see that from Talen this year. The success of this team is going to depend on the quarterback in a very large part. And can he become a much different player than he was at Boise State last year? I think that's a big question.
Right. I mean, coaching matters. There's a reason these people get paid a lot. There's a reason some coaches are better than others. So, I mean, we'll see what happens. I think it's a lot, but I don't think Bobby Petrino, you know, when Bobby Petrino selected him, he knew that. He knows what some of the problems are, and he has an idea of how to fix them. And that's something we've talked to him a lot about.
You ever get tired of the word handpicked? Everybody's talking about handpicked.
Yeah, I guess.
Like Petrino, I handpicked. I don't know that he said handpicked, but we've heard the term Petrino handpicked Talen Green. We have heard John Calipari say a number of times with basketball, I handpicked this roster.
Yeah.
Has there ever been a roster that a coaching staff did not handpick? I mean, you.
I guess you're right. I might need to edit a magazine headline after you say that.
But you know what I mean? It's like, has there ever been a roster that a coaching staff did not?
I guess
go out
you're
and say,
right.
Hey, we want you.
Yeah,
to
I never
come play
thought of
us.
It like that, but yeah, I guess you're right. But I do think with the portal, sometimes the options you want are not the options you get. So I do think there is something to be said for in the portal, and you know, maybe that's. I think some coaches lie about it and say, yeah, this is the guy we wanted all along, and maybe it wasn't. But I think in the portal, you know, you don't just go and grab somebody out of the portal. They have to, this is something Dabo Swinney used to always say when people would complain about how he never got portal players. They have to want you back. And so it's, you know, it really is a two-way street. And so sometimes you strike out on the guys you really want in the portal. And so you maybe settle for somebody. And I don't think that's what happened with Talen, but that's why I think there is something to be said for it. But I see what you mean.
I'm being nitpicky about hand-picking. Let's talk about running back.
Yeah.
Again, I think this is a position where if you compare, say, JaQuindon Jackson, the number one running back this year, to Rocket Sanders of 2 years ago, I don't know that they upgraded. I'd probably take Rocket from 22. But Rocket was not Rocket last year, whether it be the knee injury at the start of the year, the shoulder injury at the end of the year. He just never got going. He had one good game last year. Was really strong in the second half against Florida. Jackson, it feels like there's a lot of promise there with him. And I also feel like this year they've gotten more depth in their backfield than maybe they did last year. Like, they think Braylon Russell can play right away. They've got others who obviously are going to be in that rotation. And so I kind of think that maybe they took a step forward at running back this year.
Yeah, I would agree with that, especially when you talk about last season specifically versus this season. And I think I'm really excited about JaQuindon Jackson. I think he has a great opportunity. I think he can be really good. He's had some injury history, but last season he played through a foot injury and still had like 700-something rushing yards. And he talked a lot about that. His like tendon like separated from the bottom of his foot, and he played anyway. And so, you know, he's a tough guy, and he's missed a little bit of time in spring. I don't know with what, but you know, nothing that they in fall camp. They don't expect him to be, you know, they don't expect him to miss any time. But it's something to watch. You know, that's something that I'd be worried about. But I will say, like you said, the depth is much better. There, you know, we've seen Rashad DeBinion make strides over his time here. I think they feel good about him. He's kind of been at that number two running back spot. And then, like you said, Braylon Russell, they feel really good about. And, like, he could be a really exciting freshman to watch. So I think there's definitely more depth. They feel good about the transfers they brought in too.
Reed and Hill.
Yeah, and so those two guys, they talk about kind of having a different style. One's a little bit more speedy, the other's a little bit more powerful, I guess, if you want to categorize running backs that way. JaQuindon Jackson doesn't like when you do that, by the way. He told us that. Don't call him a power back. So I think I think that they have some versatility there that they're excited about.
wide receiver, it's just a bunch of players who have gotten older. I mean, it's the same receivers who were expected to play last year. Satania, Armstrong, Broden, Tesla, probably a better receiver group, I feel like, this year, just given the fact, number one, that we know that Petrino is going to put them in better situations. And by the way, we're not going to say every position is better. I promise you that. But we're just kind of working down the list. Petrino's going to put them in good situations, and they're a year older.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing, is that they got so many guys back. And, you know, how those guys develop. They have a new wide receivers coach in Ronnie Fouch, who they seem to really like. He's a Petrino guy. We talked a little bit in spring about how Satania seems to have responded really well to his coaching. And Pittman, I think it was, or it was either Pittman or Petrino, said sometimes, you know, when you get a new coach, it just reinvigorates you, or they see something in you that they bring out. And it seems like that's been the case for Satania. So I'll be interested to see what he does. But I think, you know, these are all going to be, the biggest contributors should be familiar faces. And yeah, you're right, they should have more experience.
As receivers, the tight ends, it feels like it's a better group this year because, again, Luke Haas is a year better. Hopefully he has a healthy season. No telling what he could have done last year had he been healthy. I mean, he was off to a great start to the year. Ty Washington, kind of a similar deal. When Haas went down, Washington came in, and then he got hurt. Very similar injury. They're older. The question I have for tight ends, and I think this is a question the coaches are asking themselves too, is what kind of running game are they going to be able to have with their tight ends? You know, they bring in how do you say his name?
Andreas Poska.
There
is
you
what
go.
We were told?
from Eastern Michigan. You know, I think they think that he can contribute in run blocking. I think there's some thought that Gums, the second year tight end from North Texas, can do that too. But I do think there's some question with this team, and it may be, you know, kind of across the front right now. I tell you, the fact that Pittman and Petrino both have said that it's taken them a while to get their run game going, I think that's a little concerning for them. And so tight end, it feels like a little bit of a mixed bag. Haas and Washington, we know they're good pass catchers, but you've got to be able to be versatile and have them in the game to run block too. And so that's an interesting position right there, because you don't want to have, okay, you've got this guy in, that's a telltale that it's a pass play. He's got to be able to contribute in the run game too.
Right, and that was something Pittman told me over the summer when I spoke to him for our magazine, was that Ty Washington, that his blocking was where he needed to improve the most. So hopefully for them, they've made those strides. They like Gums in the passing game. They've used him a lot in the passing game as a pass catcher throughout practices. So they like him in that role. They obviously like Luke Haas in that role. I would say, I feel like this position is holding about the same because you have a lot of the same faces. But it will be better in the sense of these guys will hopefully be healthy all year. So I would say last year to this year, same, better because of health.
Offensive line is a very interesting one to me. I think they have gotten better at tackle. Fernando Carmona, the thought is that he's going to be an NFL player. Keyshawn Blackstock, I think they like him quite a bit too, and another transfer from Michigan State. I'm not sure, and it wasn't like this was really a real strong point last year, but I don't know that they're as good on the interior of the offensive line with Patrick Kutus out right now. I know that Marion Harris, you know, they like the upside that he has, but I don't know that they're as strong inside right now as they were last year. And then on the flip side, last year a lot of their problems were at tackle, and it seems like they've fixed that. It's almost like maybe the issues on the offensive line, if there are issues, and, you know, I mean, granted, we haven't seen them do just a whole lot this year, haven't seen them do anything in a game, but if there are issues on the offensive line, it might be flipped from where it was last year.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think they do feel great about those tackles. Interior-wise, it really does hinge on Kutus, and we don't know. Pittman said last week that he would maybe be back as soon as Monday, meaning yesterday, or next Monday. We don't know yet if he practiced yesterday. Right. We were not able to watch practice, and we didn't talk to any coaches yesterday. We speak with Bobby Petrino today, so hopefully we'll be able to find out if he's back or not. I think a lot of it hinges on Kutus. They've got a Marion Harris, who they feel good about. They feel like he's coming on, but he's kind of in a battle with Amari Wiggins there. And so Wiggins has been backup center for last season and then most of practice this year until the Kutus issue. So that, and then I'll be interested with Addison Nichols. I mean, he's relatively, I don't think he'd never played center before. I think he did it a little bit at Tennessee, but it wasn't his main spot. And Pittman felt like they really, you know, they had him at center first thing. They were like, this is his spot. This is where we want to be. So I'll be interested to see how he does there and if that kind of works for them.
And it's not like they were real strong inside last year. Limmer had a lot of issues throughout the year, just making that move to center. They even, I think it was the Ole Miss game, where they put Kudus at center early in the game, and they moved Limmer back to guard, and then that was going horribly in the first half, and they went ahead and switched it back just before halftime and never changed it again last year. So it wasn't like the interior of the offensive line was great last year, but what you did have last year was you had more experienced players with Limmer and Latham, and so it'll be interesting to see how that goes this year. I think offensive line, if you took the whole of last year and the whole of what they could have this year, if you add Kudus to the mix, I think they probably will be better. Hard to be a whole lot, you know, worse, to be honest with you. But it's something that, I don't know, just something about the offensive line has felt off just in terms of what we've heard throughout the preseason. Flipping over to defense, at end, you've got Anton Junkaj this year is probably going to be one starter. At the other one, obviously, Landon Jackson.
Nico Davier is also – I mean, he's been with the ones all of fall camp, but they like Junkaj, and I think he –
But Junkaj has been hurt. And so,
yes, but he was – I mean, Davier – I don't think Junkaj has been with the ones at all, if I remember right. But that doesn't mean that Junkaj is never going to start a game. But right now, what they would put is probably Davier and then Junkaj.
Last year they had Jeff Coat, the transfer from Missouri, and then they had Landon Jackson. Those were kind of your primary defensive ends. They rotated some other players in there. I don't know. I feel like maybe if Jackson has taken as big a step forward as some people think he has, then I would probably lean to say this is a better defensive end group. I still feel like with Landon Jackson, I'm waiting to see him dominate more than just the freshman tackle from Alabama. Last year he had 6.5 sacks. 3.5 of them came in that one game, which means that he had 3 in the other 11 games last season. I think there's a lot of potential there with Jackson, but I want to see him be more dominant just in that one game. I feel like, you know, that – obviously, when you play Alabama, there are going to be a lot of eyes on you playing against Alabama. There are going to be a lot of scouts watching you when you play against Alabama. And so he did a lot for himself just in terms of his reputation, his draft stock. But can he do that consistently? That's one of the big questions I have for this year.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, you know, Landon Jackson is the star of this defense, if not this team. And as far as, at least in terms of like national conversation, you know, he's getting draft talk. He's getting on all these preseason all XYZ lists. So I think you need a lot from him. You need him to live up to those expectations. I think they like Davier and Junkaj. Davier is a guy that's kind of waited his turn. And I think they feel good about him. They've used him in this kind of buck linebacker sense where they've got him sort of standing up on the edge. So that's a little bit of a new thing. They've got Brad Spence doing that as well for when they have a 3-man front. So I think Junkaj is a guy that they're really excited about. He did miss some time, I believe, in concussion protocol this fall camp, but they're excited about him. You know, Albany has produced some really good players recently. We spoke with Junkaj yesterday, and somebody asked him about Jared Verse, the Florida State Albany transfer from Albany to Florida State, was a star for them, and they kind of asked, like, you got any Jared Verse in you? You know, you guys know each other. So, I mean, I think we'll see. I'll be very intrigued to see what it actually looks like with him on the field for sure.
We got more to get to, but first we want to give a word from Kendall King. We'll be back in just a moment to keep talking about the Razorbacks and their defense and their special teams.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
And welcome back in. We'll continue our conversation about Razorback football in just a minute. I want to tell you, though, you can stay on top of all Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. It includes breaking news, commentaries, analysis, features, recruiting, the whole work. Also gives you full access to our website at wholehogsports.com. Monthly subscription begins at $17. You can join now at hogsillustrated.com/subscribe or call 479-684-5509. To get subscribed to Hogs Illustrated. If you subscribe now, by the way, you'll be a subscriber in time for our basketball preview. That's something that we're really looking forward to, and I know that Christina and us have already had some conversations about. So Hogs Illustrated, hope you'll subscribe. Again, hogsillustrated.com/subscribe. Want to mention, too, Before we get back into football, the Arkansas volleyball team is ranked 19th in the preseason AVCA coaches poll, and they begin their preseason, kind of their exhibition season, I guess, if you will, later this week. They go up to Missouri State and play. And tomorrow we're scheduled to have Jason Watson, the Arkansas volleyball coach, in studio here today. So we're looking forward to that, having a conversation with him about his team. Probably no sport on campus has had a bigger turnaround just in terms of the perception of that sport, both from a conference and a national level, than volleyball did after an incredible year last year where they made it to the Final Eight and lost to the powerhouse Nebraska on their home court in a competitive match. So we're looking forward to having Jason Watson in studio tomorrow. We'll continue our conversation about Razorback football. Christina, I feel like defensive tackle, where you've got Cam Ball, Eric Gregory, those are probably your top two guys. You've got others like Kevy Rose, and you've got a lot of players there. It feels kind of like tight end and receiver, where everybody's just grown up from last year. They really didn't lose a whole lot. They lose Torian Carter. They lose Marcus Miller. Both of those players, you know, dealt with injuries last year, but defensive tackle, it kind of feels like they just grew up.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a little bit of concern about depth. I think with the starters, with Gregory and with Ball, I think mm-hmm. they feel really good about that. Like you said, a lot of experience. Those are two of the most veteran guys on the team. And so I think they feel really good about starter-wise. Depth, I would say, is a concern because you've got Danny Saili, who came from BYU. He spent the spring – went up from community college, spent the spring at BYU, then mm-hmm. came here. And Ian Giffrard. And Pittman said the other day, the last time we spoke with him, that he does not feel like they kind of have to use them as one person right now. Mm-hmm. He does not feel like they are ready.
They don't have the stamina.
Yes. So that is a concern, I would say, at the tackle spot. But they feel good about Kevy Rose. They feel like he's made some strides, so there's a good third guy for you. But I think there is some concern about the Giffrard, Saili, that fourth spot, and kind of what's going to happen there. When you're at this point and your coach is telling you they're not ready, that's concerning.
That is a red flag. Depth is just it's the concern across the entire defense, I think, so than it is on offense, or at least, you know, at some positions. Linebacker, they lose everybody from last year.
Except Brad Spence, who had like 100-something snaps or whatever.
You do get Brad Spence back, but just in terms of like their top,
top
hitters,
four guys, all gone.
They're not back. I was intrigued, though, recently to hear Marcus Woodson say that he thinks this group of linebackers is maybe the most deep position on the defense. Now, again, that may not be a very high bar, but you got Brad Spence, you got Steven Dix, Xavier Sori. I think Anthony Switzer is somebody who I've heard his name quite a bit. So maybe to be determined at linebacker.
Right.
Because it wasn't like the linebackers had some good and bad last year, right?
Yeah, it seemed like they had a lot of potential, mm-hmm. and then they just lost them all. So I think that's going to be a big wait-and-see kind of one. You know, we won't know till we know. I think Spence they feel good about. I think he was poised to kind of take on a bigger role this year anyway. But they like Sori, the transfer from Georgia. They've had him since he came in the first transfer portal window. The other two guys were spring transfers, Steven Dix and Anthony Switzer. And those are guys that they've been really hyping up. They feel really good about them. I just will be interested to see what it actually looks like when you put them in the game. And I think, like I said, I don't think we'll know till we know. I think they have some different skills that they can offer. But I'm hesitant to declare better or worse yet. Mm-hmm. You know, I just think we have to see it in action.
Secondary, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, last season they get a lot of people back. It seems like they get, you know, they lose Snacks Johnson, who was a big contributor. They mm-hmm. lost him after spring. And then Dwight McLaughlin obviously was big, which I saw he did something interesting in like an NFL preseason game.
I mean,
the other day.
Yeah, there's some thought that he might make the Vikings roster.
Yeah, which is exciting for him. So you lose him, but, I mean, you keep Jalen Braxton, the really exciting freshman. I think they'll need him to take a step forward for sure. And then you bring in some transfer guys. You get Jaden Johnson back, who mm-hmm. has been around for a while. They need him to stay consistent. They need him to take some steps forward. Danico Slaughter is a guy that they have at nickel or safety from Tennessee that I think they like. We don't know a ton about him yet, but they seem reasonably confident in him. And then they've got some younger guys stepping up. So both of the Metcalf brothers, TJ and Tevis, they seem to like. I believe Tevis is the freshman, if I remember off the top of my head. And TJ, I believe, is the sophomore. Yeah. Yep. So TJ, I think, is a guy that you'll see contribute for sure. Selman Bridges is a freshman corner that they like a lot, and I think you could see him, especially if you get into some needs with depth. Some other transfers, Miguel Mitchell, Marquise Robinson. It's just an interesting group of some relative unknowns. And I'll be curious who actually shakes out in those starting roles.
And you still got Hudson Clark.
Yeah, Hudson Clark, who's in a battle with...
like a red shirt super senior or something.
Yeah, which he's around. Yeah, when I asked Pittman about him this summer, he said, he's holding down the fort. We'll see. So I don't know. I'm curious about Hudson.
Clark, I mean, he's so hit and miss.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like... some games he'll make some great, and then, you know, you see him get beat. And so, but he may be their best option at that position. So still at safety. Let's move over to special teams. Let's start with place kicker, because I think that's where most of the eyes have been right now. They lose Cam Little, so it doesn't matter who their kicker is. They're going to downgrade at kicker this year. Cam Little's the greatest kicker in the history of Razorback football, potentially. And I know that there have been a lot of really good kickers at Arkansas, but you just look at numbers, you look at percentages, nobody was more accurate than Cam Little, and I think accuracy certainly matters. Matt Shipley comes in from Hawaii. You know, this is a guy who's a two-time Groza Award semifinalist, had a couple of good years there at Hawaii, was real inconsistent in the spring. They bring in Kyle Ramsey from, was it Abilene Christian. You know, they thought that maybe he could push Shipley. I think he's been dealing with some injuries this preseason. My gut says that Shipley's going to be their place kicker, at least starting out. But, you know, you do have, and if Ramsey can become healthy, you do have that guy behind him who I guess you can turn to if things don't go well.
Yeah, I mean, I think Shipley, it seems like it will be Shipley. Bob Holt did ask Sam Pittman the other day, are you ready to name Shipley your kicker right now? And Sam Pittman said, absolutely not. He's like, no, not yet. So they're not ready to declare that battle won. But I think Kyle Ramsey has had a groin issue that he's been dealing with. He had a rough scrimmage the other day. Shipley has been better. He's made some longer ones. I think he made a 51-yarder in one of the scrimmages. He's missed a couple shorter ones, but it's a big improvement from what he showed in the spring. So if you had to ask me, I would say it would be Shipley. And I do think, you know, anybody is a downgrade probably from Cam Little just because of what Cam Little was. So that doesn't mean that every kicker they're going to have is going to be bad, but it's hard to put Cam Little expectations on anybody. So I'll be curious what it looks like, but it's great that they have that depth, because I just came off covering a Clemson team that had to go get a former kicker who was in graduate school from his job in Charleston and bring him back onto the team because their starting kicker ended up not having a good year and they didn't have anybody behind him that they felt good about. Wow. So
punter, you know, they lose Max Fletcher. He was real hit and miss for a couple of years. He got more consistent last year as the year went on. Devin Bell, I don't know that we know just a whole lot about him. We know that he's been put on scholarship. We know that he's probably going to be their kickoff man too. Scott Fountain likes to use his punter as his holder. So you're going to see a lot of Devin Bell this year. But, I mean, what do we know about him?
Yeah, I mean, we don't know a lot. He had come in from Northern Colorado after last season. And, I mean, Pittman feels really good about him. I mean, he's brought him up unprompted, you know, just talking about how he feels like he can really boot it. So, I mean, we'll see. Like you mentioned, the consistency issues, I think they need a little bit more of a steady hand there, and we'll see if Bale can live up to that. But, I mean, they're confident in him, and yeah, they didn't go. I thought maybe they would go to the portal to try to get a punter, but they just, same day as Fletcher went in the portal, they put Bale on scholarship and said, you're the guy.
Eli Stein's going to be the long snapper again. My thought is, if you ever hear his name this year, that there's a problem. I mean, it's always good when you never hear the long snapper's name. Punt return, Isaiah Satania had a good year last year. The expectation is that he's going to be their punt returner again. Kickoff return, it's going to be him. And then they've looked at a lot of other players there, including didn't I hear that Monte Harrison had?
Yeah, that's what Scott Fountain said, and then Pittman talked about it a little bit at Touchdown Club yesterday, down in Little Rock. And I mean, I'll be interested. I don't know if I expect to see him there, but they have been trying it because, you know, the idea was, hey, he's been tracking down baseballs in the outfield for his whole career, so he can definitely get a football. So I mean, we'll see there. I think they've got Jalen Braxton back there, I think, on kicks too sometimes, which I think he did a little bit of last year. So
I think maybe just bottom line, after we, you know, to kind of assess what we talked about, is that it feels like they've just gotten older at a lot of positions. Older doesn't necessarily mean better. And so a lot of this is going to be dependent on, are they, you know, how well do they take to the coaching? I think the offense is going to be better this year, just as a whole. I don't think it can be worse than it was last year when there just was an obvious lack of cohesion across the board. I think Petrino's reputation precedes him. He's going to have a good offense on he's going to put a product on the field that is at least going to keep the team competitive, I would think. Defensively, that is a kind of a question to me. They were so good for the first couple of months last year, and then things fell apart at the end. They've got some of those pieces back. They've got the coordinator back. They've got the cohesion back with the coaches. How can the defense, you know, can they live up at least to what they did last year, or even take a step forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think the defense kept them in some games last year, and I think they might need it to do that again. I think I agree with you that I think the offense has the potential to be better. We'll see how it actually plays out. I do think the defense, they need it to not step back is the main thing.
Yeah, I mean, if they can have a defense that's on par with what they had last year and take the improvements that we think they will offensively, maybe this is a better year for Arkansas. But then again, they play a lot of really good teams. Christina, thank you for being here. When we come back, we're going to talk to Wyatt Wheeler. He covers Missouri State for the Springfield News Leader. We're going to get his thoughts about this Arkansas-Missouri State game cancellation. Also talk to him about covering Bobby Petrino. We'll do that in just a moment, but first, another word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Thanks for being with us. We want to tell you about Bentonville Glass, serving its community since 1971. Bentonville Glass is committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. Come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Wyatt Wheeler covers the Missouri State Bears for the Springfield News Leader. And we touched on this yesterday on our podcast, the fact that Arkansas and Missouri State have canceled their football game for next season. Arkansas has replaced Missouri State with Alabama A&M. That'll be the Razorbacks' season opener in 2025. Missouri State has yet to find a replacement. Wyatt joins us now. Wyatt, hello from the other side of the Ozarks.
Yeah, no, happy to be on. Wish we were going to be on next year to talk about the Bobby Petrino Bowl, but I guess we're not getting that anymore.
Well, you know, Arkansas and Missouri State, they play so often in so many sports. You'll have some chances to see Arkansas-Missouri State matchups, including in football moving forward. I think in a statement I saw from Missouri State yesterday, they said, you know, we hope to continue scheduling Arkansas. Just kind of take us through this, and just to give people a background real quick, Missouri State has been FCS 1AA for many years. Now they're moving into Conference USA beginning in 2025, which will make them an FBS member. And FBS members can demand a much higher guarantee payment for road games in non-conference than FCS opponents will. And that's kind of at the crux of this, right?
Yeah. And I think that was a big question when they went FBS was what happens with these future contracts, because they have plenty dated all the way to 2033. And those, as they stand right now, would look like they're huge discounts for the schools that they're playing against, whether it's the Mizzou's, the Texas Techs, the Tulsa's. So, just Missouri State. Missouri State's been shopping around trying to figure out what it can do to get more guarantee money on some of those games when, you know, this is part of why you move up to FBS when you're one of those FCS schools is to get those higher paydays. And there's only so many and there's some and that's one of those dates where, you know, Missouri State felt like they can get about three times is what I've heard the money that Arkansas was putting that they already had in place with Arkansas back when Missouri State signed that as an FCS program. Missouri State's been in talks with another school, not sure what that is yet. They've tried to negotiate with Arkansas to maybe get that number up, and it's not like Arkansas needed to match it. The Arkansas game makes a lot of sense, especially road games and everything, distance and travels. And but they couldn't. I guess Arkansas wasn't willing to budge off that previously agreed number, to where Missouri State wants to take the higher payday payout that Arkansas game. And it sounds like this will be announced soon, whoever this replacement will be.
It really is just bad timing for Missouri State, I think, more than anything, because you mentioned that those teams can command three times in Arkansas's not so distant past. We know they paid North Texas and Western Kentucky and San Jose State somewhere in the million and a half range to come in here to Fayetteville and play, and they lost those games. But the timing, when you think about this house settlement and the financial impact it's going to have on the power schools, I mean, Arkansas is going to be adding somewhere in the $21.5 million range in revenue share next year, not to mention the added expenses of new scholarships that are going to be part of this house settlement too. You know, you're looking at a $25, $30 million puzzle to solve already, and then you've got a school who's agreed to pay for $500,000 coming and asking for maybe 2 to 3 times that much. It's a hard ask, I think, for Missouri State at this time.
Yeah, timing, and, you know, Missouri State's there's just so much weird going around Missouri State right now. New president in, currently in the middle of an athletics director search, to where that might get announced here soon. But yeah, just seeing quotes from Arkansas, the AD over there, just everybody around there trying to find ways to bring money and save money. And you're getting $150,000 right now from Missouri State that you didn't think you were going to get. Able to probably turn that around. I'm not sure the payment towards Alabama A&M, but that helps, and that saves you a little bit of money on that one. So can't blame Arkansas. I'm sure they'll agree to something in the future, one of those open dates, depending on how big that SEC schedule goes and some of the other ramifications that come from all this. But it's a game that makes sense, but Missouri State tried to make it work, and I'm sure they'll make something work down the line.
Arkansas probably gets out of this, you know, good financially too. Like you mentioned, the $150,000 payout. I don't know that Alabama A&M is going to command as much money as Missouri State will. I mean, I've said this for years, Wyatt, that I think maybe within the SEC, people just say, hey, it's the FCS, and they're all equal. They're not all equal. There are tiers within that subdivision, just like there are within the FBS. You got Missouri State, who plays in a real prestigious conference for that subdivision, the Missouri Valley. I don't know that a SWAC team commands quite what Missouri State does. So Arkansas is going to play Alabama A&M next year instead of Missouri State to open the season. But again, it would not surprise to see Missouri State on a schedule somewhere down the line. Might be a little while, like you mentioned.
You know, that game was agreed to before Missouri State almost upset Arkansas a couple years ago.
Yeah, it was agreed to in 21.
Maybe they don't want to play in the future.
Well, they don't have Petrino anymore.
I kid, but, you know, it'll happen again. We'll get the in the meantime, we'll get the Dave Van Horn versus Missouri State showdowns that we've all grown to love, especially down here in Southwest Missouri.
Now, it's not Keith Gutton anymore, though.
Not Keith Gutton. It's Joey Hawkins. Yeah. It's a player that was on that 15 team back when they went to the Super Regionals and Arkansas won game three. But it's a bear in there that would love nothing more than to beat Arkansas. I think that's probably the worst taste in his mouth right now.
I want to ask you about covering Bobby Petrino and his years in Springfield. Spent 3 years there from the 2020 season, which was actually a spring season, due to COVID, 21 season and the 22 season before he left. Went to the playoffs a couple of times. Missouri State hadn't been in a long, long time before he got there. Just what was it like covering him there, and what did he do for Missouri State football? And I would have to think that probably part of this Conference USA affiliation in the first place is a byproduct of the football success that they had under Petrino.
Yeah, you know, one of the questions I asked the AD, the former AD, on the day they announced that they were moving to Conference USA, was this Conference USA from Missouri State happened without Bobby Petrino coming in. Mm. And he's just like, you know what? This is something we've been talking about for a while, but he really helped Missouri. He really helped show Missouri State what it can be if mm-hmm. it had a successful football program, which it was for two of those three seasons. Playoffs. The one question I got for years starting this beat was, should Missouri State drop football altogether? The Dave Steckel days where they were going 1-10 twice in 5 years. They never were better than 4-7. It just looked like a big waste of money when nobody was going to those games and everything. And they got up to 30 years without a postseason appearance. And it's not like they challenged for many during those 30 years, but Bobby came in, quickly got things, quickly got talent in there that Missouri mm-hmm. State had never seen. Best passing quarterback in the program's history, best receivers in the program's history, sent a defensive lineman to the NFL. The development and the coaching was an obvious uptick, especially when you see the offense and what's being called down the field. The defense got a lot better, and that's why you see Ryan Beard, Bobby Petrino's son-in-law, now the head coach. Mm-hmm. He's still the head coach here. So I don't know if it might have happened, but I don't know if it would have happened this quickly. And you know how things change so often. Missouri State's spot in FBS might have been taken by another program, whether that be the Tarleton States and the others that want to make that move. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I enjoyed the heck out of covering Bobby. I think being in a smaller media landscape than he's used to, because, you know, you see that, I know there are a ton of you that go to the weekly press availabilities for Arkansas football to get on him for every little call that he might have made. At Missouri, and when covering Missouri State, it was just me and a couple TV guys asking some questions to where it was just more of an intimate feel to where, you know, I think he really enjoyed that. And he taught instead of having to explain himself a lot. Just it was a really fun experience. I got calls from Louisville media before saying, God, Wyatt, you're gonna hate this guy. he's the worst. You're gonna hate it. And I enjoyed the heck out of it. And I'm excited to see what he does in Arkansas.
Why do you think he left Missouri State? A lot of people forget that he left actually for UNLV to be the offensive coordinator for Barry Odom, and he was there for, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and then he got the opportunity at A&M and made the jump to College Station. But why do you think he left a head coaching position, albeit in FCS, to go be an offensive coordinator?
You know, he's getting older. There are so many opportunities for him to get back in there, but you know, there's part of that is leaving it for his kids and his family. Son-in-law is the head coach. You have a son-in-law that's defensive line coach, and his mm-hmm. son is the offensive coordinator. So he's able to show them things for 3 years here, and let's just leave it to them. He goes to UNLV. I don't think it was a surprise to many. There's a lot of rumors around Texas. There were a lot of rumors before UNLV that Texas A&M and Jimbo Fisher would come calling. Mm. That didn't end up happening initially. And then he goes off to UNLV, and then A&M comes and takes him away. But I think those were, especially when he gets to A&M, I think those were the chances that he would have to be able to get back in the SEC game that he enjoyed so much. And, you know, you throw some of those resources at him that Missouri State simply doesn't have, like the ability, like unlimited NIL at Texas A&M to go mm-hmm. get the quarterback you want, being able to go back to Arkansas, which, you know, I'm sure he never even thought would be a possibility of ever happening. And just circumstances at Arkansas and the struggles offensively just made them say, this needs to happen. And, something needs to happen, and we might be desperate enough to bring him back after all the controversy more than a decade ago. But I think the hunger to get back to the higher levels was something that really intrigued him, and the possibility of getting back to the SEC, where He felt like he had unfinished business there. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the head coach, Ryan Beard, son-in-law, Nick Petrino, LD Scott, a son-in-law. Tremaine Thomas is on that staff, played for the Razorbacks. And then, you know, you look through the coaching staff and just where they played, it's a lot of Arkansas, Western Kentucky, you know, definitely Petrino influence. I just wonder, as you cover the team on a day-to-day basis, how much of Bobby's influence do you feel is still there?
It's still there. I know Ryan Beard. Ryan talks to father-in-law quite a bit, just bouncing ideas off of him. I know when I know Nick's talking to him a lot about offense and everything, just sending text messages back and forth, sending clips back and forth, just saying, what would you do here and what are your ideas here? Here's something I saw on film that might be able to benefit you. So Bobby's imprint on this program is not done. Just the constant communication, tipping them off on maybe some of those lower level recruits that aren't going to necessarily be Arkansas capable, but maybe a Missouri State lower group of five higher FCS type caliber player. But it's still there. The players, there's still quite a bit, few players who played for him still around, and they wouldn't have been here if it wasn't for Bobby coming in. And he's still all over this program. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, Petrino's fingerprints, they typically stick around for a while, even, you know, no matter how he leaves. It's that way at Arkansas. It was that way at Louisville. Wyatt Wheeler with the Springfield News Leader. Wyatt, we appreciate you being with us.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thanks for having me.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you to Wyatt. Thank you to Christina Long for being on our show today, and we appreciate you being with us. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. We have scheduled Jason Watson, the Arkansas volleyball coach, to be here in studio with us to talk about his 19th-ranked Razorbacks as they get ready to go to Missouri State for a scrimmage on Thursday night. We also have Kendall Rogers from D1 Baseball planned to be on our show to talk about college baseball. A lot of things going on with the college baseball game. Again, thank you for being here. Hope you'll visit our website at wholehogsports.com, and we'll see you tomorrow.